questions being raised with regard to a common practice that's found, I guess, in many synagogues and so forth, where one person is ill, and the people in the synagogue say prayers for that person. And the question is being raised, how are we supposed to understand such a thing? That such a thing could be efficacious. We are accepting the idea of prayer. According to the Torah, of course, it's a mitzvah to pray. And beyond that, in the prayer, we insert requests. That's part of the essence of the weekday prayer. And it's part of our emunah, it's part of our belief that God hears prayer and God responds to prayer. That is to say that there's a certain element of effectiveness. We're not saying that a person prays just for the sake of going through the experience and feeling better about the situation. That may be true, that is true, that there's great benefit in tefillah, in prayer, even aside from getting a particular request answered, the activity itself. We're not denying that. That's a very, very important idea. But neither are we denying that there's a practical point. That if a person asks and says, well, is there any practical benefit in prayer? Is it merely a spiritual benefit for myself? Or is there any possibility that my requests will be granted and there'll be a practical change, a practical benefit as a result of my prayer? The answer of Yahadus is in the affirmative, that we maintain that tefillah is effective. We don't know, of course, how these things are determined. That's based upon many factors. That's ultimately based upon the will of God. So that it's also important to bear in mind that there's no way that you can construct any kind of a test to determine whether this prayer is going to be answered or whether it has been answered, and so on and so forth. Those things are beyond the ken of our wisdom. We don't have the knowledge. But if you ask in a general way, are we maintaining that tefillah has practical consequence? The answer is that yes. That a person has every right to maintain that motivation. That's part of his motivation, that a person can ask for his necessities with the idea that there is a chance that God will actually respond to that request. The question that's being raised, however, is that we can understand how that works when you are the one who's doing the praying and you're praying for yourself. The request you're making is for yourself. But how does it work when we're talking about other people? Shouldn't they be praying for themselves? And if they can't pray for themselves, so what is the concept, what is the idea behind the fact that if we pray for them, then somehow they will be benefited? The proper approach towards answering this would be, as is being suggested, to raise the question, again in a general way, what is the mechanism by which the prayer is answered? What's the cause and effect over here? I think there's a great deal of misunderstanding about that. That is to say, that simply because you prayed to God, because you asked God, He's going to do it for you? Is that the idea that we're working with? That's a very simplistic notion. But that is the idea that most people have. That the mere fact that we turn to God and we ask for it, and we ask for it so fervently, that somehow or other, because of that, God's going to answer us. Is that the true idea, or is there a different idea? It's an interesting question when you see people are davening with tremendous fervor, very fervently. They're shaking and they're moving their hands and they're looking up to the sky with a certain sincerity, and more than sincerity, with a certain intensity and very fervent. What exactly is the idea behind that? In the minds of those people, how do they understand that this type of a phenomenon will make the prayer a better prayer? Also, with regard to that, where is that type of fervor being directed at? Because we have to recognize that the tefillah, the Amidah, the 18, actually it's 19 blessings, is divided into three parts. The first part is praise of God, in which one is not permitted to ask for any personal requests. The last three is called thanksgiving. We're thanking God. Again, there's no requests in the last three. The bulk of the prayer, the Shemona Esrei, are the middle 13 blessings, which are general headings of all the various needs of an individual. So, where is all the fervor directed? Is it equally dispersed among all the 19 blessings, or is it specific to one particular part? It would seem to me that it's probably specific to the middle blessings in which a person is putting forward their petitions and requests. Although I might be wrong. This is just how it appears to me. It is possible that some people are operating with a certain psychological attitude which perhaps is carried over from a different area. There is a danger of carrying over certain attitudes which are appropriate in human relations, in a human situation, but are very inappropriate in a situation where man is, so to speak, communicating, expressing himself before the Creator. For example, when a person is petitioning a human being who's in power, there is a certain tendency. It's not always correct to do it this way, because you have to understand psychology, but generally there's a certain tendency to really convey to the other person how important this is to you, in order to evoke a certain reaction in the other person. You want to invoke a certain sympathy for your plight. So when you do so, you will lose any kind of restraint and exhibit or express great feeling about how important this is to you and how dependent you are on this person. You want that person to sense two things. A, how significant this is to you, and B, how you recognize that only they can help you out. You want to evoke a certain emotion in the other person. It is therefore possible that certain people, when they engage in prayer, may be transferring that whole mentality, using that same basic mentality, and redirecting it towards God. That is, they recognize that the only being who has the true power is God, and they want to implore God to hear their cause. However, in doing so, they're pretty much operating with the same idea. If I can only convey my plight, and if I can only make it clear how dependent I am on God, then perhaps I'll get what I want. Now, it's possible, I'm not saying that this is always the case, it's possible that unconsciously the person is seeking to evoke a certain response in God, along the same lines that the person would be seeking to evoke responses in anybody that they would go before. If that is the case, if there are people that do partake of this type of mentality, so we have to analyze it, is that the correct approach? What's dangerous about such an idea is that it could be on the border, the boundary line of what we would call kfira, of denial. A person has to be very, very careful not to indulge in any way, shape, or form the idea that they can effectuate some type of a change in God. That is based upon a false concept of God. God doesn't change. Thus, to partake of any type of an activity which would be in some way premised on the notion that it's going to affect God, that we can affect God, and God will somehow or other sympathize with us, quote unquote, that is a false notion. That's not the true idea. The true idea of tefillah is something different. And that is to say that it is a mechanism by which we reach a higher level. We undergo a transformation. We reorient ourselves in terms of the recognition of the ultimate reality and our own place in the scheme of things and what our purpose is, that the purpose of life is to serve God. And in that context, if we reach a higher level, so then we have a right to place our requests before the Supreme Being. The idea being that if it finds favor, that's the whole idea of Ritzeh, that the prayer should find favor in the eyes of God. And what determines whether they find favor, of course, is whether they're the truth. It's all based upon truth. But simply to bring one's own personal set of emotions and just pour them forth, this is what the person would like to project onto reality, that could be a very, very dangerous phenomenon. The person has to be very, very careful. However, the general idea, in terms of the practical, the efficaciousness of prayer, is that a person changes. The one who engages in the prayer goes through a specific kind of a change, and as a result of that change, now becomes worthy in the eyes of God for the particular thing that the person was requesting. It's in that framework that God does relate providentially to his creatures to provide them with their true needs if they're living the correct life that he has designated for them. Again, I want to clarify that the first idea, which would be a wrong idea, which is possible that some people partake of this. It's human nature until you outgrow it, until you analyze all the notions that you bring with you from ordinary human experience into the religious realm. Perhaps can be summed up with a certain attitude that I can influence God. If a person is partaking of that attitude, then that is very problematic, it's very dangerous, it's false. In the sense, a person can influence himself, and as a result of the fact that he's living in accordance with the will of God, so God's providence will relate to him. That is the true idea. Again, the basic understanding, in a general way, is that the tefillah is an experience which transforms you and raises you to a completely different level in terms of your whole relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And by the way, the question has been asked, the last three blessings are blessings of thanksgiving. Question is, what are you thanking God for? Most people think you're thanking God for the things that he's going to give you as a result of the prayer. But there's a difficulty, because as we said, you have not been answered yet, and you don't know that you're going to be answered. Yet you say you always close the prayer with the three blessings of thanksgiving. The answer is you're not thanking God for the particular that motivated you to get involved in the prayer, or the particular request that you made. The thanking is for the opportunity. The recognition that this is the greatest opportunity, much more important than any particular thing I need, is the ultimate need to come before God, the King of Kings, to be in the presence of God, and to be able to recite the ideas associated with prayer, and to be able to place your request. The experience per se has transformed you, and you're really thanking God for the opportunity of that experience. That's in line with the idea that it's a transformative type of an experience. And the transformative experience, first and foremost, is important spiritually, but secondly, does have practical consequences and things that God will make things available to you which will enable you to enhance your life and to get more of the true good. When a person focuses himself on pursuing the true good that he was created for, that's the arena in which we maintain that divine providence then begins to relate to that person. That God helps him in that area. Because that's the area for which he was created. That's when he becomes deserving of divine providence. We've established that it's very important that when a person prays to God, that they should seek to remove false ideas, false attitudes towards the whole mechanism, so to speak, of how prayer works. And a very, very big mistake would be that a person believes that they are, so to speak, effectuating some type of a change in God. Or, put a different way, that they are influencing God. Anything along those lines is rooted in a serious distortion of the true idea of God. So it's vital that a person should have a proper concept of what we mean by God, and the limitations in terms of what the person is capable of doing. Certainly, the whole notion that man can influence God, the way most people understand it simplistically, is absolutely false. However, when a person engages in tefillah, the person is effectuating a change in themselves. And if it's done properly, they are raising themselves to a higher level in terms of their whole outlook on life, in terms of their direction and their purpose, and what they seek to achieve. And insofar as the person comes closer to a recognition of the real good and wants to direct their energies toward attaining it, so in that framework, they, so to speak, have a right to make their request. And then it's a sensible request. They're asking for something which is sensible and which is in line with the whole idea of divine providence as it has been revealed to us, that God assists us in the path of attaining the real good, which is a life based upon seeking out and gaining a greater knowledge and closeness to the Creator. Now, if that is the case, we understand why it's reasonable for a person to pray to God and to put before God requests that they have. And there's many, many necessities, there's many needs, and there's no limit. I mean, I'm assuming that the thing you're asking for is something which is legitimate. But even if it seems petty, it could be for material things. We ask for physical health. We ask for what we call parnasa, sustenance, our necessities. And if there are specifics, specific things that you need for, or it's a particular situation, you're about to engage in some kind of a negotiation, or there's certain types of objects you would like to acquire, it's fine. Assuming now it's all in the proper framework. Thus, the Talmud says that kol nigei libo, all things that move him, all things that are of importance to him, are of concern to him, he can ask for. On the basis of that principle, a person would not be limited only to asking for things that you would call specifically for myself. Let me ask what might seem off the bat to be a strange kind of a question. Let's say a person has a pet that's very important to them, and the pet is sick. Would it be appropriate to pray to God that the pet should be healed? Put a different way, if a person were to ask, can I pray for my dog, which is not feeling well, and so on, my answer would be, yes, why not? Because it's the same idea. If that is what's bothering you, if that is important to you, if that's your need, so that's the general idea of prayer. And in fact, even though the 13 blessings, the middle ones, the request blessings, deal with specifics of the human condition, the need for health or the need for sustenance. And the general blessing called Shema Kolenu, hear our voice, which is the culmination of the requests, that's a general request that we're making of God for all of our needs. And in that one, a person has a right to insert specifics. Well, a person has a right to insert specifics in the other ones as well. That is, in the blessing that we recite for health or for healing, called Rifaenu, there's a formula where a person can mention a particular individual that they're praying for, inserted into the bracha. The same is true with the blessing called Shema Kolenu. A person can formulate requests with regard to particulars that may not have been covered in any of the other headings. So I would say that if that's what's bothering you, then there's, to the contrary, one should place that request and shouldn't feel ashamed. There's nothing to be ashamed of. Place that request before God. It's part of the recognition that the ultimate being who has the ability to provide you with your necessities is the Creator. Now, when we come to the basic question, what is the mechanism by which we pray for an individual, for a different person, or the community will say prayers for a particular individual that's sick? What is the mechanism by which this could be efficacious? Seems to me it's an extension of this principle. That we see this in the Torah, by the way, that Moshe Rabbeinu prayed for his sister Miriam when she was afflicted with tzaras because of her sin of Lashon Hara. It seems that once we say that we have this principle that God will respond to your prayer and provide you with the things that you request, and it really doesn't matter how trivial it may seem, it's something that you need, something that you care about, it's important to you. So if that's the case, why would it only be things that specifically pertain to you? What if you have a child that's ill? Why can't you pray that the child should be healed or cured? Now, it may be that in and of itself, the child would not merit the cure. Or maybe the child wouldn't be on the level of the divine providence. But now that you've incorporated it into your prayer, if you're worthy, if you're found worthy, and God will answer your prayer, because that's part of your need, so that gives you the right to pray for somebody else's health. That's a very, very exalted type of prayer, where a person is not limited purely to ordinary selfishness, but their own needs include the well-being of other people. So that's a very significant kind of a prayer. It's important to you that this person should be well. So you're appealing to God on that basis. On whatever merit you have, that God should cure the other person. That is the mechanism by which it makes sense that one person can pray for another person, that the community could pray for an individual. When it comes to the issue of praying for somebody else, it's not as simple as when you're praying for yourself. There's other factors, because one can say, well, what about the person that you're praying for? What about his status and what he deserves and doesn't deserve, insofar as there's the issue of reward and punishment? That's a good point. It doesn't mean to say that if the person is a wicked person and the person does not repent, and merely because righteous people would pray for that person for whatever reason, that doesn't mean that necessarily that God is going to help that person because it's our request. I'm just trying to explain things in a general way. The question simply was, what's the basis of the idea that one person would pray for somebody else and that would be effective? And the other thing, I'm not saying that it automatically is effective and that there are no other considerations. So to make it simple, let's say that the person you're praying for would be neutral, that let's say the person is not really on the level where divine providence would interfere in the person's illness. But the person is not evil or wicked so that there'd be any divine providence opposed. For if the person is deserving of death in the eyes of God, then the mere fact that a righteous person prayed for him would not be sufficient. But that's not the point. We're talking about a situation where as far as the other person's merits are concerned, let's say it's neutral. That is to say, without our prayer, this person's fate would be based purely upon the laws of nature and nothing else. Then righteous people will pray for that person. So now you're creating an element of merit. That is to say that the righteous people who pray, their merit might warrant that God would answer their prayer. So if God answers their prayer, then it'll express, the answer will express itself in providing a cure for the other person, not because the other person warranted it or is deserving of it necessarily, but simply because, if that's the case, it's the will of God to provide those people who made the request with that which they desire. Namely, the other person should be cured. The idea of going to someone who's regarded as a tzaddik and asking that person to pray for you, there's nothing wrong with that idea. However, a person should bear in mind that the essential, the most essential of all prayers, is the one that you make yourself. And that makes sense. That is to say, that ultimately, the best guarantee that anyone has that he'll receive protection from God is his own perfection. He has to work on himself, and prayer is not the only thing. There's doing mitzvos, there's giving tzedakah, there's learning, there's improving overall. Tefillah is one of the mechanisms, a very significant mechanism. And it is true that if you have a tzaddik, a righteous individual, and that person sincerely prays for you, that certainly, quote-unquote, increases your chances. So that makes sense. But it would not make sense to simply go to that person, ask him to pray for you, and then just abandon every other attempt, not to do anything on your own and become totally reliant on somebody else's prayer. That doesn't make sense. It would seem that such an idea would stem from a faulty notion, that the prayer is some kind of a magical thing, and he's a righteous person, and he's going to put in his request, and it'll automatically be answered because he's righteous. That would be a false idea. A person should operate within the framework of the appropriate idea, that as a result of merit, the divine providence relates to us. And certainly, the most important thing that a person should do is work on his own perfection, to improve himself, and to become worthy in his own right. But that doesn't exclude the idea of asking others to pray for you. The other notions that people have of going to a tzaddik and getting bracha from the tzaddik, or other types of things that people do, which is based upon approaching things from the so-called magical standpoint, that it's automatic. He gives you the blessing, or you put something in the kotel and automatically goes to heaven, automatically sends a healing, that type of thing. The assumption is though there's magical forces at work, or that's the way it's operating. That is absolutely contrary to the Torah. There's no person that possesses special powers. Everything operates according to the system that the Torah reveals to us. And to maintain this notion that anything, so if you go to a certain grave and you do a certain incantation, then it automatically produces results, that's reducing Judaism to a magical, supernatural type of a system, which is contrary to the foundation of Torah, which is Schar V'Onesh, reward and punishment, based upon the fact that Hatzur Tamim Pa'ala, that the rock, his works are perfect, Ki Chol Derechav Mishpat, that all of God's ways are justice. Everything that God does is truth and justice and the ultimate level of compassion. So therefore, just to say that it has nothing to do with a person's righteousness, a person's level, and that two people, one person was a righteous person, the other one did these magical things, and so on and so forth, and to say that the other person is going to get the cure because he did some magical things. That's the same notion as people that wear those red bracelets, the strings around their wrists to ward off the evil eye. All of this is contradictory to Judaism, because you're positing these unknown forces out there that operate in a purely arbitrary way, that you ward it off by this red object. This person may not was saved because he had the red object. The other person was punished or met a bad fate, didn't have it. It's an absurdity. Because everything is based upon absolute truth and justice. That God set up a system and it operates in a certain way, and we merit divine providence through a system of perfection, of improving ourselves, of getting closer to God. But to reduce the Torah to these magical devices is, in my opinion, a denial of Torah.